think the order is to get things done.
We'll get things done, but nevertheless, let's not forget our social graces here and introduce Bill Large, who is the director of the Climate and Global Dynamics Division at NCAR, and he'll be talking to us about various things going on at CGD and outside CGD as well.
A little bit.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes. Thanks, Paul. And yes, you'll be happy to know I'm the last speaker and perhaps even the least, but let's get going. Well, you never know. I thought pointing and clicking would do it.
Usually it does.
Do you have a chance to rename your file?
Don't do that.
That would complete.
There we go.
And slideshow goes.
And slideshow goes. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's the third introduction, so I won't carry on with that other than to watch the security. So my hope was to dive into a little bit more detail on the actual some of the things that are actually happening within the WRF model and CESM, and I also wanted to give some examples of how we work on value-added data sets. And that's about all I'm going to have time for. But before I start, I want to give you a very concrete example of what's happening today. All right, so a while ago we tried to, solicit a proposal from the university community for a hierarchy of atmospheric models for university research and teaching, in particular postgraduate or graduate students. It's actually, if you go through your strategic plan, which you've all are almost through reading, I'm sure, it actually can be found there. This is trying to implement some of the things in the strategic plan. So we went to Lorenzo Paldani at Columbia and Amy Clement in Miami because they had spoken loudly about this, and so we caught them and said, go to it. So they have gone through a process of defining what the university community might want. And they had to take all the flack from different universities and sort out what the universities wanted. We did not get caught in the middle of this, and that is a very important thing. So the first request came to NCAR CGD this week from that group. And here are the three hierarchy of models that they want to start with. One is a dry spectral dynamical core with two test cases. Another is a single column model for radiative convective equilibrium. And they also wanted an aquaplanet with specified SSTs and AMIP, as well as a slab ocean. So we've already, within the week since this came, the number one model up there, we've actually got a draft set of detailed requirements from Lorenzo. So we actually know what he means by that. And so we've got that already, and we've committed to delivery of a prototype by January the 1st. Now the time to go is to the next two and get these specified requirements and start delivering it for the research community. Okay, so that is going on right now. And I don't know whether anybody was involved in replying to those letters that were written to the community. Now, going on to WRF, this is the weather research and forecasting model. I speak for the mesoscale and microscale mesoscale meteorology division, and they kindly gave me these slides. And I got the opportunity to represent them. So WRF is a numerical weather prediction capability designed both for research and operational forecasting. You saw this distribution of countries in Jim's slide earlier, the little red dots where it's being used operationally. It is a community model, a free resource, as you've heard a lot of things are. But development is coming from a variety of scientists and software engineers. It is a community by the community as well as for the community, where users may leverage contributions from the community aspect, and it is based and supported a lot by NCAR itself. The applications, certainly real-time operational forecasting, as I just mentioned, and research. Those are the two big ones, and the things they focus on are the dynamics, moist processes, and particular tropical cyclones, but more and more severe weather and impacts. It's also used for teaching, and I think some people here have used it in Canada as well. Regional climate research, it's being made into a regional model enforced by climate data on the outside, on its boundaries, and more to atmospheric chemistry and air quality forecasting, and some idealized simulations. In particular, a lot of large eddy simulations are being done with WRF now. You can get it just down to large eddy simulation scales. Okay, some elements that have come in. There is, in addition to, let's call it vanilla WRF, there is WRF DA, or data simulation. It has the usual data simulation applications, and that is all in a package, including the data sets. There's WRF chemistry, or WRF chem, which basically starts with the emissions and then transports it and then gets to predictions. And in this case, there's a 36-hour ozone forecast where Montreal's not doing too well. So that's WRF chem. In addition, they have WRF fire, because somebody working in WRF liked forest fires and things like that. And that's the capability. If you like something and you want to do it, you can get your little subtitle, in this case, fire. And they're doing an awful lot of work on surface fire behavior models. And a few years ago, there were all sorts of nice examples that this year is a bit wet out west, so it's not so good. But there was lots of fires a while ago. And then the whole idea of connecting between weather and fires. It's also gone global, so there's a global WRF. And there's an example of precipitable water on the globe, just to show you that not only can they run it globally, they can show it globally. And there's WRF Hydro is the latest, and that's a hydrological model to do more hydrology, river run, things like that in rivers. So that's connected straight to WRF now. You saw the distribution in over the world. These are just the registered users, since we've seen how many. We've always have to have these kind of numbers for our masters want to know the actual usage. And the big foreign usage is obvious. And the universities is big, 7,800 university users, lots of foreign users, lots of countries. But what is really difficult is this increasing usage, because what that's doing is putting big demands on the help desks. Okay, so there are help desks. That's where you go to. And there's now 7,000 active subscribers to this newsletter, and they have about 450 email inquiries a month to WRF help for various trivial to actually quite serious issues. So it's a big burden, but it's being done, and it's expanding. Moving to the Community Earth System Model, or CESM, I put down the usual diagram of most of this is what goes on in the physical system. What I'm not exactly sure, but I suspect that the Canadian Climate Center model and application would have a similar diagram and deal with similar things. What's missing here, because it's a little out of date, is there's much more on the carbon cycle now and biogeochemistry and atmospheric chemistry. But what I did put in here, too, is where we're going is much more the human activity. Okay, right now it's sort of asynchronous offline. That's going to get more and more online and not just prescriptive in many aspects of human behavior. The management of this thing is shown here. We have an advisory board, and we've been very fortunate to have wonderful people come onto that board and serve as advisors, and we strive to take their advice more often than not. The chief scientist is Jean-François Lamarck. He is also the chair of the Scientific Steering Committee, which we belovedly call the SSC. And that's where Paul Kushner sits. And he can tell you how wonderful it is to be on that. But I want to take this opportunity to thank Paul for all what he's done on the SSC. And we're trying to make it a more and more of a really decision body and give it more and more activities. And below everything are these CSM working groups. And that's where the work and decisions and many decisions every day get made. They can't be made at the SSC every day, that the working groups do it. And here is a cartoon of the various working groups we have. There are 12 of them. In order to keep from going to unlucky 13, these two were combined a while ago, and so we keep it 12. That's Jim Hurlism, as a matter of fact. So in blue are the basic physical models that we started with back in the 1990s, where you have the atmosphere, ocean, land, and sea ice models. Okay, all tied together with software engineering all the time. What is in green are what we would call the Earth system components, and Jim alluded to this earlier, where we have land ice now, This is the whole atmosphere model, or WACM, that goes up into the stratosphere and through it into the mesosphere. Then there's the big chemistry component now, and the biogeochemistry that spans both the ocean and land. So that's the Earth system model part of life. And then we have some applications working groups. In particular, we've always had paleoclimate, so they take the model and apply it to last glacial maximum or the Permian and Eocene and things like that. And there's also a societal dimension. This is this human part of things that I mentioned earlier that's going on more and more. So with these working groups, it's open membership. I mean, no one has to have a secret handshake or anything to join this. So, and there's many levels of participation that I wanted to point out. You can just join the mailing list and find out what the heck's going on, right down to actually being a co-chair. And each of these working groups has to have at least one external co-chair. We're not trying to be overly NCAR-centric here. But practically speaking, one co-chair has to be from NCAR. You wouldn't get anything done. Because it has a great, these working groups do tell the software engineering working group and guide it in what the software engineering requirements are and all the testing. And the software engineering group keeps this model running on a huge variety of computers every time there's a change either in the compilers at the computing centers or there's a change in the models. So that's all routinely done, and it's guided by these working groups. And the external co-chairs are the direct link into the CESM SSC and therefore the software engineering. And you can see that we have annual winter meetings and a big annual June workshop. You can contribute code, data sets, can design numerical experiments, and if they're good, you can talk people into running them, because the working groups do get a very generous, I shouldn't say generous when Al Kelly's in the room, because we always ask for more. But we do get a big allocation on Yellowstone for each working group. And it is the working groups that decide where that allocation is going to go. And that is not just done at NCAR. That's done by the whole working group. We're going to start on more science collaborations that certainly occur within the working groups, and also across working groups, which is important. And we're now setting up subcommittees to do more model evaluations. So you can pick your level of participation, and we welcome everyone. It is a community resource, and in this figure, we've actually put the various places, either data or the model, were downloaded. By putting it as dots, we underestimate or underrepresent the importance of Canada on a projection like this. If you do it just by country, you have to have Canada or you're dead. But there's lots of Canadian participation in downloads of this model. And that's the distribution. Whoops, I went the wrong way. So just in the last little while, there's about 3,000 sites from 130 countries and 320 terabytes since January of 2008. Since CESM1 was launched a couple of years ago, there's now 1,500 registered users. So it is getting out there. It's a big model, so you can't just load it onto anything, but there's 1,500 at least people who are trying. And if they can't get it going, there's also help for them. And that is where the burden's coming, and we're trying to strive to keep that going. And one way of doing that is to keep very rapid communications through bulletin boards. You can go onto these bulletin boards and really be a part of how the whole model's going. There's about 1,700 or 1,800 registered users of these bulletin boards with various 14-level forums and sub-forums. And apparently, because I never go onto these, if you get familiar with this, and you really can start to converse and become quite adept, I'm told. But there's a lot of posts. There's 2,000 posts since in just 2004 to 13. So there's lots of things to read, and even 800 in January to June. So in 6 months, there's 800 posts. So people are using it, is what I'm hearing. And there's a lot of bug stuff and developer bugzillas and. So if there is a bug found, there's a way to tell everybody. You don't have to find it. Fix it. So some community projects I thought you might be interested in. One are U.S. CLIVAR climate process teams, by which we basically abrogate to the university community what should go on to the model. Does the university community have anything that should go into the climate model? And this is a way that they can do it. And there's actually a competitive process for this, and there will be another one about a year from now, apparently run by NSF and NOAA, and maybe even NASA this time. And the nice thing about this is these competitive proposals come down for peer review, and NCAR, along with GFDL and anyone other, the modeling centers, run every proposal, so we don't care which one gets funded. This is a very good way of doing competitive proposals. Be on every one of them. I recommend that. There's also an advanced science discovery, which also was an opportunity given by CISL and Yellowstone. So there is now a 100-year coupled 25-kilometer atmosphere and land coupled to a 10th-degree eddy-resolving ocean. Those data are available for everyone, and I don't think that there is a higher resolution coupled model for more that long anywhere else. And that's, please, there's so much to look at. It could keep you going for a long time. So that is very much a community project, and those data are available. And the first paper has, at least describing it, has been now submitted. There's also a large ensemble project where they're doing, I think, 40-member or 35-member ensemble. Depends how much Paul's going to provide from Toronto. And this is another way community works. They can not only just define the ensemble, they can actually run ensemble members on their machines, and with that good software engineering help, we can actually get it running on those machines and verify that it is running properly and not with some spurious thing. That's a big deal. There's a last interglacial project on the paleo side, as well as a millennium. The paleo people just, you know, they got all sorts of big signals. You know, it's really great to move continents around and things like that. And also CMIP-6 is now, I'm afraid, hitting the radar screen. The workhorse we'll have is going to be a 1 degree. There's going to be a 1 degree or coarse resolution for Earth system modeling, where you have to do whack them up to the into the mesosphere for paleo long runs and a lot of BGC. The workhorse physically will be 25 kilometer atmosphere coupled to, both of those will be coupled to a 1 degree ocean ice. We're not going to go to the 1/10 for the workhorse. That will stay as a specialized. So that's what CMIP-6 is starting to be defined. And we still have a couple of years to define exactly what the models look like, and that will be done through that working group structure. Now I wanted to switch to some community data sets where I'm defining these as what we think are value added. And we have a number of them. I'm just going to take the one example as the climate data guide. What it is, what it's trying to provide is not only the data sets, climate data sets, but expert guidance on their strengths and weaknesses. And if you look at this example, the temperature trends in various data sets, they don't give you the same answer. And what this climate data guide tries to do is tell you what experts have learned about the HAD-ISST versus the OISST. Which actually go from a trends of an average of 0.1 degrees C in this time to per decade to 0.03. So it's a factor of 3. So rather than trying to go through all the data sets and figure it out yourself, at least they try and provide this expert guidance. And so that's what they're trying to do for 165 data sets. It's not trivial. Many of the data sets, of course, are purporting to show the same thing, and they look very different. And so all we know is that they all can't be right, and the worry is that none of them are right. So that's what this is all trying to do. Right now, up to 4 dozen experts have contributed, and there have been almost 100,000 visitors. And I spent a half day on this thing. It is really neat to go through this data site. You can just, oh, that data set, look at that one. And the other big thing, look, $375 honorarium for contributing. Getting that through finance to allow that is not trivial. So otherwise, can't be 376, but 375 we can handle. So please avail yourself. And that's U.S. dollars. US dollars. Yes, 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 yes. But you have to pay tax on it because it's an honorarium. So, but I wanted to point out, there's the site. It's really fun. So if you get tired this afternoon, whip over there. But you can have an impact on this data set. You can register as a user of the site, as many people have. You can contribute a data set and an assessment. You can post, okay? to climate data trends. That's a different thing. You can post through here to climate data trends, and you can post a comment on any data set and get an honorarium if you really contribute well. Now, my chemistry colleagues in ACD really did want me to mention something that didn't quite fit in my title, is the observational programs under that was MOPET. And that's measurements of pollution in the troposphere, because that is a satellite designed and operated by the University of Toronto with Jim Drummond of the PI. And the NCAR team does the data processing and algorithm development. That's been a collaboration since 1999 or before. And this is just an example of a long-standing collaboration that can happen if everybody gets together. So I believe that's lunchtime. That's fine. I was just hinting it's lunchtime. There are none, see?
Well, I guess there's one. There's one. Good, yeah.
Microphone.
You mentioned that in the Earth system model, there are new aspects. Those are human related. So can you just elaborate the information? What aspects are being included? Because that may be very important, and that was a missing component for a long time.
Yeah, it's coming from two different ways, and I guess that's why it's nice having both aspects at NCAR. As a home by which then you can bring in other people. One are things like land use and the effects of land use and human activities on land. And then there's an awful lot of, which is coming from the integrative assessment community, where you're doing demographics and economies. And they're the things that produce the scenarios like the RCPs. So they project an RCP for, say, CMIP 5, and based on certain climate ideas as well. So then that's what the climate models run. But then the actual answer you get is inconsistent with the original assumptions that went into the RCPs. So it's trying to close that loop, and we have a big integrative assessment modeling. Two of our most recent hires, one's been a demographer, and one has been an economist. We actually have an economist now. And so and then there's also the physical land changes, like our use of land or hydroelectric damming, things like that. And so we're trying to bring both together. But it's very, very slow, because you can have an awful lot of wiring diagrams if you're not careful and not understand anything. But I put that there because I think that's the direction we're going. There is an awful lot of room in that societal dimension working group to decide what to do. Okay, so that answers your questions.
You said you keep track of people that are downloading this model, so each individual center can use it if they don't have their own model. But do you also track the use that people will have of this model? For example, if I use some parameterization or part of this code to develop another model. Do you keep track of this?
Only if you post back to the bulletin board.
So you don't know if, for example, at the end in the CMIP 6 ensemble, a lot of part of this model will be used in other kind of models?
Oh, well, if you're going to contribute to a CMIP, you know, there's less than 100 models. We do know the ancestry of those models. Mm-hmm. For example, CMIP 5, the Norwegians took a large part of CESM, and we know about that. So when there's a few, but all those different sites, it's only what people give back. We do keep track, especially when they go to the helpline, though. If they need help loading it up or getting it running, or it blows up here in this particular model, once they get back to us, we know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So we keep track at that point. But it is free code, so you can go and download it, take it and abuse it as much as you wish, and we will not know what you're doing. Yeah. That is possible. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I just to follow up on that question, I think maybe what's not so clear is that for both WRF and CESM, if you have make a concerted effort to develop new modules or modify physics in some way, there's a process for having those changes brought back into the development the development tree, basically. But it might take some time, but there
to get back onto the main trunks.
Yes,
that's a different thing. And
it's hard, but I mean,
I can take the time. WHARF and CESM work very differently in this regard. If you go to the WHARF user workshop or you have something to contribute to WHARF, then typically what they will do is put it in and get the model running as that as is an option. In CESM, because we have to run thousands of year control runs, you can't run 1,000-year control runs with every possible combination of a whole bunch of different choices. So the choices are typically then made by the SSC under recommendations of the working group. But that's where I said there's a big role for people on the working groups to become on evaluation. That's exactly what I put somewhere here. Right there, this evaluation. What component will go in? Now, typically, it's been up or down. You know, it's been very draconian. And I think that's going to end. I think they're going to have to keep at least a couple of components, especially on convection and atmospheric boundary layer stuff. It's just not clear who's going to win in the global context. But because we have to have components to work around the globe, you can do wonderful tropical convection, but how do you do over the Antarctica, for example? That's why there's not the choices and a selection process that you can have within CESM that WHARF has. So that's quite a different distinction. But it is through the working groups and these workshops that happens. And it's quite possible to do. Okay? Now it's lunch.